time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit, and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation, all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Justice Kennedy calls it a day and retires, shocking many. And the outcries you can hear about, President Trump, he has another selection to make. And some folks are not happy, some are elated. Isn't that the way it goes in America, friends? What do you think about a Russia summit? Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump, the travel ban upheld, and the other one with the unions. This is a big deal as well, with the public unions taking a hit. How will that impact the political landscape, I wonder? Congressional hearings this past week, cries to abolish ICE. That's going to be interesting as well. And again, America the Beautiful gets ugly on our 242nd birthday. We have a pretty explosive conversation coming in our segment here. You almost call it a town hall, if you will. But this is where we'll take a beat of the nation and take a look at how polarizing we are. Let's get to the top of the show here, friends, and welcome. Dennis Santiago is here. He's a global risk and financial analyst. His subject matter expertise includes strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, and global stability. He's also a weekly columnist right here at America Out Loud. Dr. Ron Martinelli joins us. He's a retired police detective. His background is in investigations, forensics, psychological profiling, and human factors, violent crimes. He's often referred to as the expert's expert. He is also the host of a thread of evidence right here on America Out Loud. Well, the news could be heard from coast to coast with the retirement plans of Justice Kennedy. So President Trump now will make his second appointment to the court on July 9th. He will make that announcement on who it will be. He said he's got the list narrowed down to five candidates now, including two women on the list. Now, you got to remember, Kennedy was 81 years old, and he will depart on July 31st now. He says it's the greatest honor and privilege to serve our nation in the federal judiciary for 43 years. 30 of those years in the Supreme Court. Of course, you got to remember, he was nominated by President Ronald Reagan and sworn in to office in 1988. Well, Kennedy became known as the swing vote on the nine-member court, and there were a lot of decisions here that were impacted, friends. I mean, big questions now are being asked about how long the court will stand before, you know, you got the abortion ruling, Roe versus Wade, they're most worried about. But also, you got to remember some of the more recent ones. In 2015, same-sex marriage. That was another one. And the Affordable Care Act, don't forget that one in 2015. He sided with Chief Justice John Roberts in that case. And so there are a lot of big rulings here that have happened. And, you know, Dennis Kennedy is... you know, it's hard to imagine. A lot of people are still aghast to know that he was a Reagan appointee. And yet, he upset conservatives more than once, I might add, in some of his rulings. This is a big deal. It's a significant deal, and it's going to change the landscape of the court. And I think people are recognizing that in all cases here. And a lot of these decisions, keep in mind, are 5-4. Which, again, it's hard to fathom sometimes when you think about the fact that their position is to, hold up the Constitution? But, of course, it's how you interpret the Constitution, first and foremost. What do you think about their biggest fear out there? People are running wild right now on abortion and gay rights specifically, that they could be overturned. Should they be concerned, do you think, and will that happen?
Oh, I don't think they should be concerned that things like that will be overturned. That these people are at this point trying to use their imagination to prepare for an election, and you know, the bottom line with that's just stupid, man. I mean, you know, like the thing that's actually really important about what's happening here is, like you said, the swing vote that has guided the moral compass of the Supreme Court. A Reagan appointee is leaving. He's going to be replaced by someone who may The betting from the people is that it'll be somebody more that's a strict constitutional constructionist, more along the Bork line of thinking. Mm-hmm. And if that happens, does that mean that the court will favor conservative versus liberal causes in the long run over the next, you know, these guys are stay there for three decades, mm-hmm. generations. Right. I don't think so. I think what's going to happen is that you have a court that will go back to being a more constitutional judiciary. And is that really such a bad thing, given that the polarization in the other two branches of government is what it is? I mean, I think in the long run, you have to look at the United States has a natural way of moderating itself through forces like this. And that's actually one of the most important and most powerful things of the American experiment. Not bad for 242 years, my friend.
That's exactly it. 242 years almost to the day, my friend. And all right, so Dr. Ron, I like the way Dennis sets that up there. And, you know, again, this polarization of the country right now is reflective in these liberal and conservative attitudes right now. We're seeing an incredibly divisive society right now. I mean, we're going to cover that in our final segment here, and how ugly things have gotten out there. But this is why people are taking this very personally here, this change on the Supreme Court. What is your take on it as far as, do you think that they have, do they have reason to be concerned with abortion and gay rights specifically? I mean, these are the two big, you know, elements that they're looking at here. What do you think?
I think that this is this dissension and everything is the end result of the lack of a lot of uninformed and uneducated people in our society. And, you know, for the last 40 years, education has moved away from informing students and citizens about their civil rights, the Bill of Rights, and how government works. They don't even teach civics in school anymore. I don't think a lot of listeners probably know that. And as a former high school teacher eons ago, I will tell you that they've moved completely away from that type of education. Students used to be far more informed on how our government works and the branches of our government. And because of this lack of education and knowledge, which was absolutely forwarded by the mainstream media, they seek to diseducate people with fake news. This just exacerbates that problem, which, you know, is driving the conversation right now.
Well, listen, right away, Chuck Schumer came out, the minority leader, and he said he rejects the president's list of 25 potential nominees. I mean, that's quite a list. He rejects all of them, and he says that this shouldn't happen in an election year. But of course, that's every other year in this country, which would be unprecedented, clearly. I mean, it's not a presidential election, and which they often refer to as the Biden rule, but that clearly is not the case this particular year. But it looks to me like he is throwing as many Hail Marys as he can down the field. So I think the early signs are people would think Chuck Schumer is very, very concerned. Here's the question, Dr. Ron. Can they stop him? Is there any way that you believe the Democrats, I mean, because you listen, they're fomenting right now about this thing in a big way. Can they stop him at all?
Well, I don't think they can. And they blew it. And they were reminded that they blew it with under Harry Reid. And, you know, the Republicans told the Democrats they would regret those actions. And I think the Republicans and President Trump is going to get one of his 25, you know, chosen to be another Supreme Court justice.
I think Chuck Schumer is running a very big risk in this world right now, in that if he turns obstructionist, he stands no chance against Trump taking advantage of that using Twitter. It is a bad move by the Democrats.
Well, it's going to be interesting because some on the left are calling for a major protest of millions of people in riots and things of this nature. So, you know, whether or not this is a precursor to a real confrontation, I think this it could be a tipping point, potentially, people. Don't forget I said it here first if that happens, okay? Listen, I want to talk to you about the Russian summit that we knew this was coming, even though it's been very much back and forth here. So it is set now, we do know, for July 16th, and it will be in Helsinki, Finland, is where it will be held. It will be Donald Trump, the president, and Vladimir Putin, the president of Russia, will meet for a one-on-one and a lot of big conversation, I am sure. This has got a lot of people edgy. A lot of people, the president came under a lot of fire for why would you meet with him? You know, this is enemy number one. Well, clearly we have made Russia into a laughingstock in the country, Dennis. I mean, we've made a mockery out of any resemblance of a potential relationship here. What do you think of this? What do you think is going to be on the agenda? Well, give me the top, two or three items that you think will be hot on the list for Putin and Trump.
I'll give you the top two that come to mind. One goes all the way back to Henry Kissinger. I think there is an opportunity here for the United States to take a lead role in turning the face of the entire Eurasian continent around by reconsidering the prospect of giving Russia most favored nation trading status. Russia needs something like that desperately. Okay, only 5 of the 85 districts in Russia are solvent. All the rest of them are underwater. This is a $1.4 trillion economy. It's tiny. It needs help. And Donald Trump understands that. And so does Vladimir Putin. By doing so, you could change the global political landscape.
Let me ask you this. What if we trade them that for the fact that they would get out of eastern Ukraine and Crimea? No game?
Well, that's the second piece of it, okay? I mean, you know, like the
question
there,
could happen? Though, you really think that could happen where they would agree to leave those properties?
No, I don't think that could happen.
They just built a bridge, by the way, to Crimea that President Putin was walking on.
I'm not really sure I would advocate getting out of there anyway. I mean, it's the European Union that wants them out of there.
Dr. Ron, the president shocked everybody when he was up at the G7 saying just before going in, you love these bombs he throws out there, and says, hey, what do you say we pull Russia back in and make it a G8? And everybody was like, what? I mean, they just couldn't believe it. But really, he's looking at a world where he knows he's got to be, you got to deal with Russia. You got to have them at the table. They're a large country. They're a force out there, in a lot of ways. So the idea of having a summit, first of all, makes a lot of sense to many, but there are those who won't have that. And back to them getting favored nation status, that's a big deal. Do you see him, first of all, them getting back on that page? And if he does, I mean, don't you think some people are going to get pretty irate because you constantly hear the argument about Crimea and Ukraine?
Well, you know, I think anybody would be naive to deny the fact that Russia is one of the three major world powers. And because they are a major world power, they are a nuclear power, they are a military presence and a strategic presence throughout the world, you cannot deny an opportunity for negotiation with Russia.
Well, we had another pretty big shooting this week as well. This time it was in a newsroom in Annapolis, Maryland here, the Capital Gazette newsroom. The man charged with murdering 5 people, this could have been even far more worse than that. I mean, it's strange. We don't even know all the facts yet. A lot of this has been sort of quiet. It's been very interesting how they've done this. Now, Dr. Ron, I want to stay with you a moment on this. And the murderer, the killer, has been very non-cooperative, is what we heard from officials, really not saying much of anything. And there's been a lot of misinformation as well, as there often is in these cases, actually. But again, we're back to a case where this guy goes in. He got the weapons legally. It wasn't illegal. He went in. This was a workplace violence kind of thing, I think you'd call it, I believe. It was a disgruntled employee. He wanted to do harm to people. He locked the door, from what we understand, not allowing people to go out, and started killing people. I'm not even sure what stopped him at that point from killing more before he hit under the desk. What sense do you make of this senseless situation, and your thoughts?
Well, first of all, let me just correct you, because, you know, I go all over the country and I'm involved in the forensic investigation of active shooters. And so I will tell you that there are 6 major motives for an active shooter. Mental health is the first one. Revenge is the second. anti-government sentiment and anti-religious sentiment, terrorism, and the last one is people. Some people are just pure evil. This one is not workplace violence. This is a revenge motive, and we have plenty of forensic evidence indicating that. I sort of disagree with the police a little bit. I know he's being uncooperative, of course. He's not a nice man. He's been a harasser all his life. He's been a person that wants to be in control. He tried to be in control with personal relationships and failed, which got him convicted for harassment and making threats. And, of course, he tried to sue this newspaper because they had printed a story about him, about his criminal conviction for the harassment charge. And, of course, he sued them, and he lost, and he lost his appeal. So he has been angry towards the entire staff at this newspaper for years. So although it took place in a place of business, we need to remember that 40% of all active shooting incidents take place in business environments. So that is a business environment active shooter, but the motive is going to be revenge.
Well, you know, what you say there is very accurate. And the man, one of the gentlemen who was fearing for his life and his family, was an attorney who represented that case that you mentioned a moment ago, Brennan McCarthy. And he came right out and he was very concerned. He said, of the thousands of people I've dealt with in court, this guy stuck. I was extremely scared that he was going to do something to me and my family. And this was the attorney who handled that earlier case. So you're right when you say this was a man who made a career and a life out of harassment and scare tactics against people. Now, Dennis, again, looking at the footprint, I always like the way Dr. Ron dives into these things and looks at, okay, the history, the psychological factors in a guy like this. See, this is one of the things we're seeing a lot of, where every time there's an incident like this, I can tell you right now, I can set my watch to the point, although I don't wear a watch anymore, I have to set my clock on the phone, I guess, but I could set it to the fact of when the sounds will go off, as far as, well, you know, I seen signs of this, and oh man, look at the social media, and oh boy, why didn't anybody say anything, and oh boy, this guy's a harassment. And then, like this attorney who said, and you just kind of can't figure this out. There are so many people out there right now, and especially in the political landscape, that are like extremely evil, and their conversations are evil. If we were to lock up all the people that we thought could possibly, potentially, perhaps, maybe have some intent, by golly, you'd clear the streets pretty quick, and there'd be very few people out in the evening, Dennis.
Well, yeah, and if you did, who would you talk to on Facebook?
Exactly. I don't want to hear the next person after an event like this say, why didn't we, and where were all the signs? There are always signs, but we can't follow up on all the signs because we'd lock up a lot of the populace, I think. So what do you do, Dr. Ron?
With these people, and 80% of my caseload deals with mental health issues and these murders that I investigate, is that there's more than one way to skin a cat. And there are mental health laws that we can bring to bear that we also need to toughen up. And I think we need to really look back on this internet thing, and maybe the Supreme Court can start making a few decisions that deal with all the threats that take place nationwide and internationally using the internet.
Yeah,
because we can't go on and threaten people like this, Malcolm, and then allow these people to carry out these threats.
Right. I mean, I think you bring up a really valid point there. Clearly, the vitriol out there, and especially in today's surroundings, is serious business. So it's a matter of everybody paying attention and being alert is about what it comes down to, or you're in the wrong place at the wrong time, as they say. And then again, as Dennis says, how do you defend yourself? That is always the question at the end of the day, people. Big thank you to Dennis Santiago, Dr. Ron Martinelli here. The travel ban was upheld. The unions take a big hit. Congressional hearings again, cries to abolish ICE. And then later on in the show, our panel discussion on America, the Beautiful Gets Ugly. On our 242nd birthday, where are we going in this nation? As Viewpoint rolls on.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. Well, as we come back with you here, this was a big, big week with the Supreme Court, and the travel ban was upheld. That was a big decision. Of course, that's been going back and forth between the courts. Big hit on the public unions. What will happen there? That's a big, big movement here that will be remembered with this session, that this could be the turnabout with public unions across the nation. We had congressional hearings with Ray, the FBI director, and Rosenstein were on the hot seat there. And what do you think about this concept of abolishing ICE? There's a lot of talk and a lot of people coming up and want to abolish ICE, and that would impact immigration in a big way here. Let's have this discussion here with Ilana Friedman is here. She's a strategic counterterrorism intelligence analyst. Well, Ilana trained in Israel. She focuses on the impact of terrorism and its threat to America and the West. And she's a weekly columnist right on America Out Loud. Also joining us, Brian Gold is here. He served in the United States Army and U.S. Special Forces for over two decades. He now works with the Department of Defense and is the CEO of Applied Solutions Consulting. All right, the travel ban. Now, this has gone back and forth, back and forth. Here's the real takeaway I take with this thing. You know, this was really more about, to me, presidential powers, because had the Supreme Court not upheld this, this would have been a big hit to the executive office. Now, part of the conversation or the confusion here, friends, is that there were a lot of things that the president said while in campaign mode. Well, like anybody who's ever ran for public office, right? And I think the real question to me is, do we hold these people accountable with what they say when they're running campaigns versus when they're in elected office? That, to me, is the underlying point to this that really has had little coverage. But to me, that's the big takeaway, because everybody wanted President Trump held accountable for some of his statements. And Ilana, he did come out and say some things in campaign mode about Muslims specifically, although the right doesn't want to really admit that, but he is on record as that. And I think that's where the court was, undecided with what to do, but clearly it fell to the point that the executive office was empowered with this decision. What's your take on it, Ilana?
Well, first of all, he did say something during his campaign, and he said specifically that we need to stop Muslims from coming in. He said, quote, and I quote, until we know what the hell is going on, unquote.
That's right.
But this was the early Trump shooting from the hip. His original ban, which he proposed, has been changed considerably, so that, first of all, it doesn't mention Muslims. Specifically, it mentions countries, Iran, Libya, Somalia, Syria, and Yemen. Those are the Muslim countries that are involved. Every single one of them is in turmoil. And what that means is that they don't have the capability, and America doesn't have the capability, of vetting people who come from those countries. There are plenty of Muslim countries around the world, like the UAE and Saudi Arabia and tens of others, who are not on the list. So this is not an anti-Muslim ban, in addition to which North Korea and Venezuela are also on the list, and they're not Muslim countries.
Exactly,
at all.
Exactly.
Well, I think this is a very good ban. I don't think it covers enough territory, because these are not the only countries in turmoil, but I think it's a good start, and it will at least keep some people from coming directly from those countries. It means they can go to other countries and come in, but at least it's a good start. I think it was a good decision by the court, and it is a place for us to start to limit our liability in terms of international terrorism.
Brian, what was your take on that? And you see my point about the president and some of his comments in campaign mode. Now, there are a lot of people who obviously are against this administration and wanted him to be held accountable for things he said during campaign mode. But you kind of really can't do that, can you?
Well, no, you can't do that from a legal perspective. Obviously, what people say in public and what they want to happen has nothing to do with their legal course of action. But I think you have to remember, Trump was elected on those campaign talks. He was elected on those election comments. And I think he needs to be held accountable in the respect that people voted for him to become president under those auspices that he said he's going to do. And he's done a good job of that. I have no problem with that. The ban was not on Muslims. The ban was on countries, as Alana said, that we could not communicate information back and forth in an intelligent manner that didn't allow him to come in, didn't allow him to be vetted. And I agree with it. But as far as campaign mode, I wish people would hold their politicians more accountable for what they say in campaign mode. Mm-hmm. I think they should be not reelected or fired. When you go say you're going to do something when you're in campaign mode, I think you should be held accountable for it.
Well, had they done that in this case, Brian, then the Supreme Court would not have upheld this travel ban then. If they had done what you just said, he would not have had this decision weigh in his, because he said some inflammatory comments about that, as we just discussed with Alana, in campaign mode. So they would not have upheld this then. You follow me?
But this ban wasn't based on being Muslims. It was based on countries we can't communicate with. And that people were actually doing state-sponsored terrorism. Yeah. So what he said in campaign mode about Muslims had nothing to do with this ban.
That's a point is taken. Yeah, that point. Yeah. You're kind of right with what you say there. I hear you. No, and I can't really argue that back, because when you look at it on the basis of what you see, when you see, again, Venezuela, North Korea, as you were saying, Alana, a lot of other Muslim-type countries that are not on the ban. But yet, basically his critics took that, and this is where a lot of misinformation does harm. Because if you polled the public right now, if you went down Fifth and Main Street right now, people, and you polled the public, I would guarantee you that most people believe that this was a ban on Muslims, because the media has put it out that way. Don't you think, Brian?
Oh, without a doubt, I could agree. That's the spin doctors at their best.
Right.
It's the same way they're demonizing ICE. They try to demonize the president against the Muslim population, which we've actually brought in over the last 10 years, a tremendous, within the hundreds of thousands of Muslims, refugees into the country, especially under the Obama administration. Those are just like the illegal immigrants coming across the border. Those are potential voting blocks for the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just trying to get them on their side.
Right.
It was 100% spin, nothing more.
Well, the other problem, Ilana, was that this was also tainted the president's image as far as him being against immigration. This was back to the comment about being a xenophobe. This was, again, another major talking point that the president has been labeled with. Hey, all right, listen, I want to talk to you real briefly about ICE a moment before we get to that other Supreme Court decision. There's been a lot of talk about abolishing ICE over the past week here. I mean, it's really got to a feverish point now with people coming out. A lot of politicians are saying, yeah, we got to reinvent this and do away with ICE. The president sent out a tweet yesterday. He says, to the great and brave men and women of ICE, do not worry or lose your spirit. You are doing a fantastic job of keeping us safe by eradicating the worst criminal elements. So brave. Well, the radical left Dems want you out. Next, it will be all police. Zero chance. It will never happen. That was his tweet. That's kind of an in-your-face tweet, Ilana, again, as the president is very known for, but he's putting it out there right now that you're not going to get away with it. The whole thing about abolishing ICE again, this, to me, I guess, is what I'm seeing as another big media misinformation campaign that has been put out for these brave men and women down at the border. What do we do about it? I mean, how do we handle this?
Well, first of all, I think we really need to understand and get the message out that ICE is not they're not beating up children. That's not their job, and they're being accused of the most horrendous things regarding these children who have been so-called separated from their families. The fact is that Trump wrote an executive order that stopped this practice a week and a half ago, and it stopped. The problem is that many of the children who are still in these holding facilities have not were not brought over by their parents, and they don't know where their parents are. Their parents aren't there. They don't know who brought them over. They can't connect with anybody, and the people who brought them over don't know who they are. So there are a bunch of kids down there who simply don't have families to connect to. They're not there. So that's the first thing. The second thing is what the job that ICE is doing is so phenomenal in terms of stopping not only the trafficking but in people, but also the drug trafficking. Their job is to stop the trafficking of things like heroin and fentanyl and the things that are killing Americans.
Listen, I want to talk to you about the other decision with the Supreme Court. This was, to me, a big game changer, the public union. So the union dues can no longer be forcibly collected by individuals opting out of joining a public employee union. Wow. I always wondered how they would force people to have to pay the union fees. To me, it seemed to be against the freedom of speech, freedom of expression, freedom to do what you want to do. I never understood how they were able to mandate that. In fact, the Supreme Court came out and basically said that this was the wrong decision when they made this decision many decades ago. Ilana, this was, I think, a surprise to a lot of people. It was another 5-4 decision. So it wasn't like, you know, like a lot of these decisions, it's by the skin of your teeth, 5-4. But this was a surprise. How will this impact the political landscape, do you think, Ilana? Because, you know, we know the public unions and the money they donated to the Democratic Party was significant. What happens with all this?
Well, it really depends on how many workers decide to opt out. If the number of workers who opt out is significant, then it is going to impact the amount of money that unions are able to donate to the candidates of their choice. And in the past, they've all been on the Democrat-liberal side. Mm-hmm. So if you're a worker, I used to live in Virginia, which was a right-to-work state, very, very, at a time when this was not a big discussion, but Virginia was very proud of it. And I've always been a supporter of right-to-work. I think people should be able to not have to donate money to causes they don't believe in. What we will have to see how many numbers decide not to contribute to
I think it will. And Brian, to Ilana's point, I'm going to suggest to you that I think it's going to be a very large chunk of the populace who are not going to contribute to those unions, because clearly they know their money isn't being spent where they want it to be spent, number one. And number two, they may just decide that they would prefer to have the money in their own wallet than to give it to some organization who may not have their best interest at heart. I think it will have an impact. What do you think?
Well, I'm no great fan of the unions. My family was West Virginia, the coal miners union up there. It pretty much threw the people to the wolves a long time ago, and West Virginia's never recovered from it. So I'm not a huge union fan. I think there's more than just the money involved here. Mm-hmm. I think that the unions are going to have to tone down their rhetoric. In the past, they knew they had an unlimited amount of cash coming in because basically anybody that worked around them had to pay them. And I think that's been a huge political issue. I think now not only do you have to worry about union members pulling out, I think you'll have to worry about they'll have to tone down their rhetoric so they don't lose more. When employees start saying, hey, if you keep supporting this candidate, we're pulling out, now the people have negotiating power with their own union, which really is kind of counterintuitive and very unnecessary, but it's the way it's turned out now. Right. I think more than just the money, I think you'll see them have to tone down their rhetoric a lot,
I'm very happy about. It's definitely going to change the landscape. There's no question about that. Listen, this was also another week with some congressional hearings. I want to touch on that with you guys. Again, it wouldn't be a week in Washington without more hearings and accountability, would it now? Well, this was FBI Director Wray and Rosenstein, the deputy director there, Department of Justice. They were on the hot seat here. And there's been a lot of stonewalling, they're saying, and documents not coming back and forth that have been going on for months and months and months. That congressional oversight, this is their responsibility. It's their job. They have been asking for these documents, and the DOJ has refused to pass them over. So there's been a lot of games going. It's sort of a shell game, knowing where things are at. Well, the president comes out And he, while he was on Air Force One, he was questioned by some of the press, and he made this statement. He said, "I think the whole thing is going to work out. I think that he'll give what is necessary. I think that whole thing will work out. I watched yesterday," he said. "I think they'll get what they need, and I'm sure Rod will do what he has to do." Hmm, interesting. Brian, let's stay with you on that topic here. You see the president's tweet come out, and, you know, he's saying he has confidence in Rod. A lot of his followers and a lot of the party has no confidence in Rod Rosenstein. In fact, they want him to resign. Now there's talk about maybe impeaching him, and there's subpoenas in play, and they're talking about subpoenaing these documents. They're simply not getting them. Is it safe to say that the DOJ, that they're hiding some things, Brian?
Oh, I think it's more than that. They've always been hiding things. And I think to see them impeach him, I think would actually give Congress back a little bit of its spine that's lost over the last couple decades. Because quite honestly, when it comes to dealing with the executive branch, they're feckless. They always have been. They've never used any of their powers. They never used any of their authority to actually do anything. Mm-hmm. And it's been quite infuriating. Mm-hmm. I'm no fan of Rod Rosenstein. And I'm certain that the moment the Mueller investigation is over with, he'll find himself unemployed.
Right.
And I hope so. I think Trump is balancing that above all things much more eloquently than he does other things.
Well, a lot of people would agree with you with what you say there. And, you know, Ilana, this whole thing about President Trump again with these hearings. Now here's the thing I want to stress with you. So, all right. Ray and Rosenstein are part of the executive branch. I mean, they report to the executive branch. They report to the president. I mean, I tell people this all the time because it's a fact. So here you have this, really, this stalemate, if you will, and this fight within the executive branch. Well, the president is the commander-in-chief, and he is the one that is responsible. The buck has to stop with him, with the executive branch. I think the question a lot of people are wondering is, should President Trump intervene? And why hasn't he? Is part of the reason because his hands are tied with the whole Mueller investigation with Rosenstein, as Brian was just saying, it's like walking on eggshells. What do you think? I mean, is this a fail of leadership? And should Trump have stepped in already?
It's possible that earlier on he should have stepped in, but the problem that he was facing, and he still faces, is the perception. How does it look to the American people? And it because the investigation was about him, it would look like he's trying to shut it down in order to protect information that would make him look bad in some way, or a criminal.
All right, listen, we will leave it there. Big thank you to Ilana Friedman, Brian Gold. Up next, friends, America the Beautiful gets ugly. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
So Maxine Waters comes out and she says, God is on our side. If you see a member of the Trump cabinet, push back. Wow. I mean, it gets a little bit more, some of her talk there. Well, on our panel discussion here joining us today, Gail Murphy is here. Gail is a media expert, a showbiz reporter and Hollywood correspondent speaker. Gail is called a celebritizer, and she is a moderate progressive, we will call her. Ava Armstrong is here, political commentator, radio personality. Ava is an author. She writes about patriotism, law enforcement, military. Ava is a libertarian. Linda Martinelli is an entrepreneur, owner, and president of Proforma Graphic Print Source. She also has a show on America Out Loud called Talking While Married. You must check that out. Very interesting. Linda calls herself a common sense conservative. And Brian Gold rounds out our panel discussion. Brian, as you know, was on earlier in the show, served in the U.S. Army and Special Forces for over two decades. He now works for the Department of Defense. He calls himself, now, this is kind of interesting, fiscally conservative but socially liberal. So that kind of tells you a little bit there. So you see, there's a cross spectrum of people here and political beliefs, so this should be a really good conversation here. So Maxine Waters, I want to get back to that a moment here. She says, And these are her words. If you see anybody from that cabinet in a restaurant, in a department store, at a gasoline station, you get out and you create a crowd. You push back on them. You push back on them. Tell them they're not welcome anymore anywhere. Those were unbelievable comments that were said that I've never seen a public official say something to that magnitude. I mean, that was calling for, I guess, violence if you talk about what pushback means. I guess depends how you define that, pretty much. Gail, I want to start with you on this topic, because what was your take, and what are a lot of people out in the West Coast saying about Maxine Waters specifically? You're from California, and I wonder, I mean, does she represent part of the populace, or is she just three sheets removed of a couple of brain cells? Tell me.
Well, first I'd like to make a comment about your comment and your feign outrage about Maxine Waters. As a news person, I've been covering Donald Trump since, well, I'm from originally from Queens, New York, so I've known about Donald Trump my entire life. I grew up about 7 miles away from where he did. So I'm very well aware of him and his family and them as developers. But I, this feigned shockness on your point, if you have followed the campaign in 2016 with any diligence, I think I recall many times from the front of the stage, he was calling for knock people out in the room. So I'm very shocked at your tit for tat. I thought you were a lot more open than that, Malcolm. And your statements are inflammatory right out of the gate. So I would like to have a real grown-up conversation about this rather than look at that, look at that, look at that. Oh, but don't look over there.
Okay. All right. So I appreciate that very much. And we're going to talk about Trump and his statements and how he's fed into it. But this really, what I was asking you was more about Maxine Waters, not Trump specifically. And here's the big difference in what you say, Gail. You see, Maxine Waters is an elected politician to office. Donald Trump was in campaign mode now. And I will say this, while I don't agree with a lot of things this campaigner and president has said, a lot of people in campaign mode say silly things, say stupid things. But you bring up a very, very valid point, actually, that I want to hop on right now. And the outrage of the left, like a Maxine Waters, which I don't take back anything I said, by the way, but
you don't have to. That's not no rules.
Yeah. So there you go. So with the outrage that Maxine Waters puts out there, and that a lot of the left, people are surprised on the right. Now, I want you to talk about that a moment, Gail, because you bring up a very interesting point before we go around the table here with everybody, because I think what's happened here, the reason they've become unhinged, a lot of the right are flabbergasted. They're like, oh, I can't believe this. But actually, I'm not truly surprised because, again, I think the left believes that Donald Trump has called for all this and that he has been part of the problem and that he has been totally, unhinged himself from the beginning. Is that what you're saying?
No, I didn't say that. I could say unhinged if I wanted to, but I don't believe in name calling.
So what are you saying?
Well, I think I already said it. And that is the reality that it exists on both sides. And this feigned shockness that it only exists on one side, I find very unacceptable from you because I know you to be much more open-minded
than
that.
All right. right. Well, I go after all of them. Again, I've been very critical of this president when he has spoken. And Ava, let's get you in here. You know exactly this, how critical I've been. So back to Gail's point, she doesn't have to be shocked because I go after the president. You hear me do that all the time on this network. And I do it as well because I don't like that sort of rhetoric and that buildup. I think it does nothing for civil discourse in this country. But back to Gail's point now. You hear her outrage, Ava. And you hear a lot of people would feel representative of what Gail is saying. She's a big, big, big piece of the populace who really resent. Now, I couldn't get her to say I used the word unhinged. She didn't like that. Whatever. Just, you know, whatever cereal brand you're using. But I'm talking about the real problem here, Ava, which is...
No, there's a big difference.
Well, what is that difference? Tell me what the difference is.
To me, there's a big difference between having a candidate stand there and say, yeah, drag him out, okay? He's disrupting the rally. And there's a huge difference between that statement and the statement that Maxine made, okay? She was actually calling for organized violence.
Well, let me stop you there, Ava.
Premeditated.
Let me stop you there. Gail said, no, you're out of context a little bit. She made it clear that he made the comment, I'm going to punch you in the face. Now, you didn't say that when you just said, let's keep it in context here. He did say that, by the way. I remember hearing that. So what about that? Is that acceptable?
No, it isn't. That's not correct, and
exactly.
We shouldn't let it slip by.
We have to agree on a starting point here before we can even elevate the conversation.
That's well said. All right, let me ask Linda Martinelli here. Linda, the point we have on the table right now is really the big point of this whole thing, which is, and you know, there's a lot of people on the right that say, let Trump be Trump. That was the book that a couple of his followers wrote here. Just let Trump be Trump. Well, Trump is being Trump. And Trump being Trump, he is infuriating a big part of the populace. Now, I know you're very supportive of the president, but you hear comments like, I'm going to punch you in the face. And things that, I mean, you could have a whole list of things he said. I mean, we could sit here for hours and I could share them with you. That a lot of people would really say don't belong in any politics. And then Gail says she's upset because I would say that I'm surprised that Maxine Waters would make these comments. You see where the problem is, Linda?
Well, I do see where the problem is, and I don't necessarily agree with the take that we've been talking about, because it wasn't the one side of the aisle, the Republican side of the aisle, that was trucking people in, having George Soros pay them to disrupt all the speeches from the candidates. It was only one side doing that, and Trump may have said, punch him in the face. I didn't hear that, but I'll go with that. But it's not the other side saying, you know, let's take out the president's son and put him in a cage with pedophiles. The rhetoric is much higher on one side than the other, and you have to see that.
Michael Moore right now, who is calling for a million people to surround the Capitol to stop the Supreme Court vote for a new Supreme Court justice.
Wow. Yeah.
Now, he is saying in his rhetoric, this is in quotes, he's going to find ways to stop these people from seating a Supreme Court justice. Now, stop and think for a minute about this. Think about the 13 colonies back at the very beginning of time, okay? Mm-hmm. If they hadn't pulled together, what would have happened? That's what I'd like to ask Michael Moore. That's what I'd like to ask Gail. That's what I'd like to ask Maxine Waters. That's what I'd like to ask a lot of people.
Well, I have to say congratulations to Gail for being the ultimate spin doctor on the interview. The original question was about Maxine Waters, and in true progressive fashion, we've turned it to Donald Trump again. So good job on that, Gail. Second off, if you want a starting point, let's talk about April 1992, when Maxine Waters was doing the same thing against the older George Bush in the L.A. riots and calling for violence, which eventually got a guy ripped out of his truck and beat to death. This is the same kind of rhetoric that Maxine Waters always uses when her party is behind the power curve.
And she does nothing for her constituents whatsoever.
There was a very interesting social media post that, Gail, you had reposted, I found most interesting. And it caught me by surprise because when I read it, I wasn't sure who was saying it, but it was somebody on your feed one of your Facebook friends, which, again, we use the term friends very loosely in social media, but somebody had made this comment, a note to my Facebook friends, and here it is. Those of you who voted for Donald Trump had every right to do so. It's a privilege of being an American. But those of you who still support him need to unfriend me immediately, as there is no reason for us to remain in touch. That was a pretty big post put out, and you put it out and put it out in social media yourself to engage people. Gail, could you take a moment and tell us what sort of feedback and response did you get from this person in social media who said that? You didn't say it, but someone else said it. What kind of comments did you get back from folks, roughly? I mean, what was the general rage of people, Gail?
That it was a real relief on both sides just to be able to actually articulate the heaviness of just trying to even communicate how people felt about it, that there's really no safe place without being polarizing.
But this guy who said it, he was obviously sincere in his feelings, Gail, and he really, which is really the sentiment of a lot of people out there. A lot of people would relate to that fellow because they don't want to associate with anybody from the other side. That's the point we've got to in this country, isn't it?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with not necessarily a difference of opinion, because I really had a problem with the Bushes, but I never have seen the level of discourse, the polarization.
Right, right.
Is like standing in front of a tsunami and demanding it to stop. It is so heavy.
Yeah.
I think that is more so than actually the content of what's actually happening. I believe it's more the reaction to it than anything else.
All right. So let me ask Linda this. Why is it, what Gail just says there, Linda, why is it to that level? I don't think anybody would dispute what she just said. The level that it is right now is beyond anything any of us have seen. So why, Linda?
Well, a couple of reasons, I think. The first is the dishonesty and the spin of the media are ginning up the public with false subjects, and the total rejection of anybody on the Democratic side accepting that President Trump is our president and doing everything that they can to obstruct that, right? But you know, this whole thing about the media is a big deal of mine. In fact, I have an article on the platform right now called Inciting Violence. And when you have the media doing the false narratives, and then people get all excited about it, and then they start protesting, as they have been protesting, say, about the immigration, their facts are all wrong. And the problem is that we don't have the facts because we're not being told the facts. So we are reacting in this country to things that aren't even true. And it just becomes this whole thing about Trump. And, you know, from my point of view, I look at President Trump and I say, I don't know what he's doing wrong. I'm looking at what we asked him to do, and he's going forward with it and doing it, and it seems to be driving the other side crazy. But the ultimate thing, Malcolm, to me, is the spin and the dishonesty in what the media is publishing and pushing every day, and people in this country only listen to sound bites, and they don't figure out what the facts are.
All right, so people do only listen to sound bites, and it's because, and I say this all the time, Linda, it's because people have a life to live, and everybody
exactly.
is busy with their own lives, and you know, very few people except us crazy folks follow this stuff incessantly when we wake up till the time we go to bed and watch what the clowns are doing. I think if you polled most Americans, they would not believe that the president has any respect for the press, and of course the press has no respect for him. It is a mutual hate club, Ava. How do we fix that?
Oh, I don't think that's something that's going to be remedied very soon. I mean, you have to understand, first of all, that almost 99.9% of people who are in the press are liberal-leaning. I mean, they're progressive or liberal. So they are automatically starting out kind of like these guys that were in the FBI texting one another how much they hated Trump.
Uh-huh.
Imagine if you read the texts of these journalists to one another. I mean, it would be eye-opening, I think. Just read their articles, and it's eye-opening. I mean, I've actually gotten to the point where I don't read the press anymore. That's really sad.
How do we fix this? Let's talk about problem solving and not really the problem itself. I'd like to go right around real quickly and say, how do we fix this? Linda, start with you, please. How do we fix this? What's your solution?
Well, my solution would be to for people to tell the truth in the first place. And because that's probably not going to happen, I think that we all have to take our own responsibility and educate ourselves as to what's really right and really wrong in what we're being told. And if you just take the whole ICE thing, that they want to abolish ICE because they're you know, separating families. ICE is not separating families at all. So get the facts yourself, and then you can logically think out how things should be and what right and wrong is here.
So the question again in bringing people together, how do we chart a new course? Is it possible? Gail, how do we do this?
We have to agree whether we want to live in an echo chamber or not. I don't want to unfriend people because of their politics. Mm-hmm. I want and I need open dialogue. I want to hear what people are doing. I don't live in an either or world. I don't live in the white or black world. I live in the gray, and we all do. Democracy is a living and breathing and real actual entity, and it's not for the faint of heart. And it's only for people that have on big boy pants and big girl pants and are willing to roll up their sleeves and work together. This is not my country. This is our country.
Well, there are too many people who want it their way or the highway. So that's where the lack of unity is in, really. Ava?
Well, I think we have the solution right before us. It's so obvious to me. The Constitution is what brings us together and always has been a binding factor for this country. Our Bill of Rights. These things are all very, very imperative for us to use as a touchstone. The laws of this country are very important. It's important that we uphold our laws. We're a law-abiding society, and that's what we were meant to be. That's the touchstone. You always have to go back to the Constitution, go back to what holds us together. Mm-hmm. Government doesn't hold us together. It's the Constitution that does. I think Brian can speak to this.
Brian, last word.
And I believe until the country sees our opposing parties sitting down at a table and having a civil discussion, not a punching match or a jabbing match, I don't think there's going to be a lot of change, because the country as a whole has to see our representatives, you know, the representatives we put up there, getting along and trying to make it work. Until that happens, there's really no reason to do that. I think that's just going to continue to get worse.
Big thank you again here on this conversation, as you can hear it, friends, to Gail Murphy, Ava Armstrong, Linda Martinelli, Brian Gold. Well, listen, it is a big concern. It should be a concern to every American as we now take a look at this 242 years, this birth date of the United States of America. It is time to really take a look and see what connects us. We celebrate our Declaration of our Independence. Many of our fellow Americans have completely forgotten much of what makes our country truly unique. Our role of religion, our speech, protest, the right to be who we are, the right to disagree, the right to be able to do what you want to do when you want to do it. At this moment, our nation stands at a crossroads. You know, our government was conceived under the rule of law, guaranteeing the freedoms for all people, that is now under attack by, well, government corruption at the highest levels, by its most trusted institutions. If leadership starts at the top, friends, it is time for leaders to stand up and take a stand. And civil discourse needs to come back to this country. People need to be respectful of opinions and need to be open-minded and not take it personally. What makes America great? It's our common purpose. It's diverse people that can at times disagree, but have respect. And they respect each other's rights to disagree, along with a unique American culture that binds us together. I believe in those rights, friends, at America Out Loud. It's our let the silent voices be heard. It's to bring all voices together. I love all people the same and unique. I appreciate everybody's opinions and thoughts, and we need to get back to that rule of law back in this country, and or we're headed down a wrong road otherwise, friends. Thank you for joining us and being part of this conversation today on this Independence Day celebration. Viewpoint this Sunday will always deliver an honest analysis and opinions on all sides of the political aisle. We don't discriminate against an opinion. The main thing is we are always in search of the out loud truth.